We start with the top down. Like I said, you can come in this building at any time and you're going to find a Love Green walking around. I'm not going to ask my employees to do anything that I'm not going to do myself. If it's, sweeping the floor in the back, or, we have a customer waiting, we got to go back and wash a car. I'm not gonna make anybody do anything that I don't want to do. So it's always a top down. It's very family oriented, and I just want to create a culture that, people want to come to work and they want to build a career. This is not just a job. I want people to think that this is a career, because people will stay with you. People don't, leave a company, they leave management.
You're watching Cue the Next Leader, presented by VinQ. I'm your host, Angela Rizzo.
When a car accident in 2013 sidelined Courtney Lovegreen's professional golf career, she decided to shift her career focus from swinging clubs to selling cars. After spending a few years successfully selling Range Rovers in Florida, she decided to move back home to Kirksville, Missouri, to join her father and sister at their fourth generation family dealership, Lovegreen Ford.
Well, hey, Courtney, how you doing? How's it going
I'm doing
today?
Great. Yes, it is a gorgeous day.
Listen, we're both in Missouri, so I'm
Yes.
so right.
Yes.
Springtime is here,
Yes.
and I think we're going to have a beautiful day. I hope you're going to be able to get outside today.
Yeah, it was 40 yesterday, 60 today. So that's typical weather in Northeast Missouri.
Stay in the Midwest. If you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes and it'll change.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Courtney, I'm really excited to interview a little bit about your role at Lovegreen Ford, how long you've been in automotive, your dealership. Why don't we just start out by, a bit about your journey?
Yeah, so my journey was not planned at all. So, backstory, I had the opportunity to play golf in college, and I pursued that career professionally down in Orlando, Florida. And my 5, 6 months in, I got in a really bad car accident and kind of had to stop the golf scene. I was hoping to get better, get back at it. And it was just kind of ended that professional career. So I needed a job, and right next to my gym was this cute little wine bar. And I took this girl's position, and she trained me for like 2, 3 days. And then boss's birthday came probably 4 or 5 months later, I would say, and she shows up in a Bentley. And I'm like, hold on. Like, I know what your position was 4 months ago. Like, what's going on here? And she's like, oh, I work for a car dealer now. And I'm like, hey, I got kind of some family background in car business. Do you think you could get me in? She's like, yeah, contact my boss. 2 weeks later, I'm doing an interview, and then I get hired 2 days after my 23rd birthday. Back in let's see, that was 2013. And so I sold for the Fields Auto Group in Orlando, Florida, at Land Rover of Orlando. I did that for about 3.5 years and fell in love with the business. It's something that I knew I wanted to do, but I knew that I wasn't in the right place. That opened up conversations with my father, who runs Love Greens here in Kirksville as the general manager and owner. And he said, yeah, he says, we'll make a spot. Come on in and yeah, let's see what you got. It took me about a year. The weather in Orlando is a lot nicer. The beaches are great. There's always something to do. So I moved back to Kirksville, Missouri, town of 15,000 people, and that was in 2016, the end of 2016. And I came in as a sales manager, and that's my role today. So that's my journey into the car business. Some little wine bar in Winter Park, Florida, that got me in. So who would have ever thought that?
I have so many things to say. First of all, I'm heartbroken for you all those years ago about being a professional golfer. I play golf, probably
Okay.
nowhere near the level you were at, but I love the sport, so I can only imagine how hard when you couldn't go back to the sport and play professionally?
Yeah, it was tough.
But you really made the best out of a really bad situation. And I also feel for you leaving a coast and moving to the middle of the country, because I'm originally, and I fell in love with Kansas City, of all places, when I was working for Sprint. And I moved here. I was the only person in my family. I have four brothers and two sisters. Oh, the only one to move out of the Bay Area. And then I fell in love with Kansas City. They all think I'm crazy, but there's such a great quality of life here in the Midwest.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great story too.
Right? So I get that. I get that. And I love the fact that you're working with your family. Is your dad, I assume your dad is still the owner and GM of the dealership?
Yes. So I'm fourth generation. So I have dad's my boss, and then grandpa runs a second location in Palmyra, Missouri. That's off Highway 61, real small town, 2000 people. And he's there with the youngest brother, my uncle Robert. So they're there. We're here. And I work alongside my dad and then my sister, who's 3 years younger than me. She's in parts and service, and she's a service director. So it is a true family business here.
Really great. What do you think sets your dealership apart from other dealerships, in the area?
You know, just going back to that family feel, we're here. You walk in the morning and, there's a Lovegreen walking around. You know, we're visible. Fourth generation, we got women in key roles, and we try to keep that hometown feel and, just stay away from that terrible corporate word that people just sometimes, it's not always goes their way. So it's just that family, just homegrown dealership that I think really draws people in.
I love it. I love it. When you think about how the market is changes, how do you and your dealership stay competitive?
You know, that's really tough. And there's, if I had the perfect answer to that, I wouldn't be here today. But, I would have to say, back to VinQ, I got to lean on my rep, and this is a shout out to Chris Arnold. He calls on me every month, and he's always got some idea, something to look at, something to try new, something that's going on in Florida that, hey, it might head your way. Try this out. So you really got to kind of lean on some third party vendors that talk to hundreds of dealers. They know the market probably better than what we know the market, just because they got so many people to talk to.
You know, that's really a great point. Chris Arnold is performance managers, and he's one of the leads of the group.
Yes.
And, he's got a ton of experience. I think he's been in the automotive industry more than 20 years. So to your point, he takes what he's learning from other customers, and he's more than just somebody that calls in and says, how you doing? I mean, the performance managers really look at the business and your inventory and everything that's going on, right? Don't they help, guide you?
Absolutely.
That's great. You mentioned being on VinQ. I know that you've been on VinQ for quite a while, a very loyal customer. Thank you. We appreciate your business. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what are some of the key things from your dealership performance that you track and has really helped you and your dealership?
Sure. So you'll probably, don't quote me, you'll have to get the quote from Nikki. I think we were like one of the top 50 dealers that signed up with you guys at NADA. I think back in, 2014, 2015, I was still working for Land Rover, and I flew to NADA because my dad's like, we don't have an inventory management system. We have no way, I need to get into the technology side. Here's my dad talking about technology, which is interesting. And so we signed up with you guys, and we had access to the NADA book. We had the old school paper book where you got to Oh my gosh, I don't even know how those work. dating myself there, but we got on VinQ and it was like a whole new world. It's like we had so much more data that we didn't even know existed, and it was accurate. It was fresh. So we went from nothing to using VinQ, and all of a sudden we had all these KPIs to measure. And, you know, we started with you guys when you guys were just starting out with just a small little dashboard. But that was like mind blowing to us as well too. And so, you know, we've grown with you guys, and I understand like the growing pains, and, but the data is just so unreal that you can measure any KPI that you want. And it holds you accountable. It holds managers accountable, and it's, you know, the data doesn't lie. So there are certain KPIs that I look at. Chris has definitely opened up some KPIs that I need to be aware of that I didn't even know existed. So it's been an eye opener. So here we are.
That's great. Yeah. You know, it's funny because 2015, wow, we were just a baby then. And it's been almost 10 years. And, yeah. You know, the software has evolved so much over that time. And we pride ourselves in saying that a lot of the enhancements and changes are dealer led. Like, you know, yeah. We almost operate like a family business where,
sure.
Right. You know how you feel how people feel when they walk into your dealership. That's how our customers feel when they work with us, that, you know, we're here, we do everything we can to support the dealer body, because if you guys succeed, then we succeed. And I think that's how that's how we like to operate.
I remember texting Nikki. Like, Nikki was like our rep at the beginning and like onboarding us. And I remember when you guys went to the mobile platform and it became bigger, I was like, hey, when I'm walking around a car, can I have the note section in the mobile device? I can't remember all these notes and then come back to my desktop and type them in. She's like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. So I don't know if I was the creator of that, but I remember texting Nikki and being like, hey, this would help me out a lot. So I really do appreciate that you feel like you can mention something and you guys look right into it. Your support team's awesome. I had a little issue with my buyer's guide with font sizes. I text Chris. I think it was fixed within 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's great.
That's what I said. Yeah. So it's crazy. But yeah, I agree. And that's why I think we've partnered with you guys so long, because you guys have the same core values as we do in that family aspect.
Yeah. And, you know, we want to hang on to you for as long as we can and forever. So as long as we're here, we want you to be here supporting you guys.
I promise you I'll be right with you guys. Anything you need, let me know.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, let's talk a little bit about your dealership and some of the challenges that, you know, you faced as a dealership owner operator, and how do you overcome them? Can you think of a few examples?
Yeah. You know, inside the dealership, personnel is huge right now. We have a lot of really good people. We just need to expand a little bit, and it's hard to grow somebody. People come in with, you know, bad habits, or, you know, they used to do it this way, or the last place they did it that way. And personnel is difficult. I don't have a good solution for that. It's trial and error. You know, they always say, you know, hire slow, fire fast. And unfortunately, that's kind of what we've seen post-COVID, is people getting back into the market and into the job market. And, you know, you need warm bodies, and you can ruin a sales floor by hiring the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. Outside looking in, you know, there's that push-pull rub between the OEM and us. You know, we are a small dealer. You know, Ford labels us as a U300 dealer. They are taking away my area manager, and I have to call Mexico. And hopefully I get somebody, and hey, I got this problem and I need this fixed. And I just call like a hotline now. I don't have, you know, I don't have Finn that I could email and be like, hey, order number, you know, customer name, where is this car at? I don't have that anymore. So it's inside the store and outside the store, there's a lot of challenges. One fix that I think I found on the outside in that OEM is you just have to document everything in writing. And you just have to use their terminology, you know, what they track, and just kind of use their own system against them to try to get something done. It's not fun. You know, sometimes you got to be, you know, somebody that you're not, you know, you got to be aggressive about it. You got to be stern about it. But you have an unhappy customer, you know, we're just trying to solve a problem, and you're either a part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And sometimes I feel like the OEM does not want to be part of the solution. They just push it on us and just kind of say, figure it out. So that's a lot of frustration that's going on right now inside or outside the dealership with the OEM.
Well, you know, your customers are lucky to have you as their advocate, because I have a feeling that if I came in with an issue, you would do everything in your power to solve it.
That's right. I mean, that's all we can do.
Right. Right. Well, then, so let's shift to a little, to some success stories. Are there any memorable success stories or things that you'd like to share that you've experienced at your dealership?
So last year I went to NCM Associates there in Kansas City, and I graduated from the general management school. That was like 10 months long, and show up on a Sunday night, and we would be in class Monday, Tuesday, half day Wednesday. And we did that, I think it was like every 6 or 7 weeks. So there's like, you know, six sessions, and it was just information overload. I think I found 15 of my best friends, because we're all in the same boat with the same struggles. You got, you know, I had people in California, you know, people up in Ohio, and they had the same problems I have. Shocker, right? You know, they got, you know, 200 employees where I got 20, and we got the same problems. And so that was real eye-opening. That was a grind. But at the end, I have so much more information. The school was great. The people were great. The instructors were so helpful. And I was ready for that. You know, working in this business for almost 10 years, you can only get so much from your peers, so much from, you know, third-party companies. It's, I needed further education, and I got it. So a huge success.
That's great. I'm so happy to hear that. You know, we've been talking to the folks at NCM. Okay. We've been partnering with them. We just did an event in March where we had 65 women in automotive come for a luncheon. And it was women within, you know, the surrounding area. And I just did a podcast that came out yesterday. And Stacy Stewart, who is one of the VPs at NCM, is on. I'd encourage you to take a look at it. And
sure,
we love
yeah,
NCM.
Let me write that down real quick here so I don't forget. And you said it was Stacy.
Stacy Stewart from NCM. She's a VP. She's lovely. They are just a wonderful company. And I know that they offer a lot of value to dealers. And the fact that they're here
absolutely
in Kansas City, right? Do you know that they established the first 20 group?
I did know that. I couldn't believe that they did that before NADA 20 group. I was actually shocked on that. So
1949, and it was a Ford. It was a Ford store 20 group. And it's still, Stacy said it's still going on today. Same 20
group. That's
great. Isn't that crazy?
I'm not surprised. That is crazy.
Yeah. So that's amazing. And it's so great to connect with more women in automotive who are in leadership positions.
Absolutely.
You know, there are a couple of other women there that are in really high leadership positions. So it makes you feel proud to be in automotive, right? When you can contact and connect with people. So let's talk a little bit about your customers. Like, are there some things that you're doing, you know, above and beyond the family feel? What are you guys doing to ensure positive interactions with your customers and customer satisfaction?
You know, that's a tough one. Cause the OEM grades us, you know, they send a survey out, and you know, we're either rock stars or we're like the worst dealer ever. There's like no middle ground. I think every question should be either like yes or no. But what we have found over kind of the last couple of years, we feel like we've figured it out. The first thing is communication. You gotta communicate with your customers. You gotta be transparent, and especially in like back in service, and somebody has an issue with their car, they don't know what to do. And we're the advocate. And you just have to make them feel like they're not alone. They're not going through this alone. And they got somebody that they can trust, somebody they can call and feel like they're going to get the job done. And so you almost got to hold their hand through it. But if they know that they're not doing it alone, nobody wants to do anything alone. You know, that's a little bit of a fear. And so if you can get that across, that they feel like they got a friend that they can trust, I think that goes hand in hand. You know, we try our best, but sometimes our hands are tied, but we're not going to do it alone. So I think that's kind of the mentality that we've adapted the last couple of years and has helped, especially back in parts and service.
Oh, I love it. Are you guys leveraging other technologies or digital marketing in your dealership? And if so, can you talk a little bit about that?
So we are the land of flip phones. I don't know if you knew that or not, but all flip phones end up in Kirksville, Missouri, the die. So I didn't know you could still buy flip phones like brand new, but they are a hot commodity here. So, you know, we have customers, you know, 30 minutes east and west of us that don't even have internet. So the technology side is, it's there when we need it, but it's very intimidating for our customers. You know, when you do an e-contract on an iPad, we actually print out that contract and it's side by side. You know, it's so nerve wracking that you just scroll, sign here, scroll, sign here. They have no idea what they're signing. You know, they trust us. But it's sometimes technology can hinder that trust factor. And I think you can hide facts behind it and you lose that transparency. So we are not the most tech savvy people here, but we mirror our customer. So I think it kind of goes hand in hand a little bit, that when it needs to be there, it's there. And then when we need to like tone it down a little bit, we can come to that customer's level and they feel so much more comfortable. And I think that's why some people come here instead of going to the city and buying. They don't want an iPad shoved in their face. I think they want that pen and paper and show me. So.
Yeah. Show me, right. Isn't that the
show me state,
Missouri?
That's right. Show me state.
And you're right. You have to accommodate what your process is to your customer base. So if they're not tech savvy and, you know, your point, there are some areas that don't even have internet service. I mean, wow, Kirksville, Missouri is not that far away from Kansas City. So you have to modify your approach to meet your customers where you are, which is what you just said, which I love.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Are you seeing any that you want to talk about that are kind of like foreshadowing or shaping the future of automotive retail? You seeing anything out there in Kirksville?
Probably the biggest thing is affordability. I think that's a huge issue right now. I think that's something that the OEM really needs to take a look at in the future, is the affordability factor. The fact that, you know, the everyday truck F-150 XLT is over $60,000 today. That's crazy. You know, these payments that we see walking out the door is just like, it's baffling. So we're going to have to find a way for affordability. You know, we're purchasing, vehicles like late model vehicles, something that's 2 and 3 years old, that's still under manufacturer warranty, that we can put a service contract on it. It's very reasonable. And, you know, we can get these people into a decent payment. You know, that old 250, 350 payment is now 450, 550, 600. And it's pension people. So I think affordability, and I think we're starting to touch on it a little bit now, through automotive news and stuff that's coming up. But yeah, I think affordability is going to be a huge issue in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I think you nailed that right on the head, that the manufacturers, you know, now they're pivoting to everything is EV, you know, the electric vehicles, but you know, the infrastructure is not there. If you don't have internet in Kirksville, I'm sure there's not a lot of EV charging stations out there for the public to use either. So.
Yeah. I think we have 4 in town, so we're moving up, but we're getting there, but it's slow.
Yeah. Well, you know, when everybody wants to drive either a truck or an SUV, it's difficult. Somebody's got to come up with a low, if they come up with a lower price model that people can afford, I think they're really gonna be ahead of the game here for the majority of Americans that want a new or, you know, nearly new car.
Everyone's looking for market share, and that's the easiest way to gain it. Chevy's got that little Trailblazer. It's entry level, little compact SUV, and I have nothing to compete with. They're eating my lunch.
Yep. Is that
So,
Trax? I think I saw one yesterday. I couldn't believe how
well,
cute it was.
oh my gosh, the Trax, they redid the Trax, and that's a cute little car. Then they got the Trailblazer, they got the Blazer. The Toyota Prius is killing it in our area, that hybrid model. And I think that's also a direction that we need to focus on, especially here in, rural Northeast Missouri, is that hybrid. But it's got to be affordable. It's got to be affordable. It's got to make sense. And because I don't think people are ready to be in stuck in that EV, just so much range anxiety and uncertainty. And so
Yeah, I'm
we
with
got
you
a
on
long way to
that.
go.
I'm with you on that.
We got a
Yeah,
long
I
way to
think
go.
so too. I think so too. And you know, it's the same thing. It's like, again, I don't mean to harp on this, but areas that don't have internet access, you need to make sure that they also have vehicles that aren't the highest you know, the newest models that have all the bells and whistles, because that's not what people need or want. You just need something that can get them from point A to point B, and that's reliable.
Yeah, agreed.
Yep. So let's shift a little bit and talk about, you know, you mentioned a little bit about your team, but when you talk about, you know, building a strong team culture in your dealership, are there certain things that you're doing to build that culture? And are there certain qualities you look in people that you're hiring on your team that fit into that culture?
Absolutely. So we start with the top down. Like I said, you can come in this building at any time and you're going to find a Lovegreen walking around. I'm not going to ask my employees to do anything that I'm not going to do myself. If it's, sweeping the floor in the back, or, we have a customer waiting, we got to go back and wash a car. I'm not gonna make anybody do anything that I don't want to do. So it's always a top down. It's very family oriented, and I just want to create a culture that, people want to come to work and they want to build a career. This is not just a job. I want people to think that this is a career, because people will stay with you. People don't, leave a company, they leave management. And I'm very strong about that. I want people to work for me, and I want people to see that I'm working for them, especially in the sales manager role. I don't know how many times I've been to softball games, football games, basketball games. An employee tells me, "Hey, I got a soccer game at 6. Is there any way that I could possibly leave 5 minutes early?" I'm like, "Great, can I come too?" And you just showing up for your employees is huge. Back when you're a little tyke and mom and dad show up to your little t-ball game and you like look in the crowd and you wave to them, it's like that feeling. It's the same whenever I show up and I see one of my employees like coaching a football game. It's that showing up feeling. And that's that culture that you really can't teach it. Either fit or you don't. And that's why, kind of going back to personnel, it's really hard to find somebody that's that perfect fit. Because I believe we do have a really strong culture, and I'm not going to change my ways for one person. So when I come to hire people, I'm looking for somebody that wants a home, somebody that wants to be a part of a team. Somebody that's willing to help. And one of my favorite interview questions is if they've ever played organized sports, whether if they were 10 years old or they played in high school. And you can kind of elaborate on that, like who was your favorite coach? Why? Who was not your favorite coach? Did you ever get into an altercation with a teammate? Here we're talking about, somebody that has to, that's not their mom and dad. It's not, they're not getting paid. So it's completely volunteer. They got to fit in and they got to take orders from somebody that is a coach. And so I think sports is, sports great. Sports great for, I love hiring athletes. I just think that they take direction better. They listen better. You tell them something and they do it. I think there's just that, I don't know, that discipline that can't be taught. It kind of has to be learned at a younger age.
Well, and, you know, athletes want to win.
Right. That's right.
Right.
A little bit of competition. A little bit of competition goes a long way here.
Yeah. And even competition with yourself. Like, they want to get better. Sure. Right.
Sure.
That's great. I might actually steal those interview questions from you, because that's
sure. Really, I got a list of them. I'll send them to you.
That'd be great. That's a great way to really get to know someone, and to have them talk to you about how they interact with other people is to have them talk about how they deal with, you know, with sports. You can really learn a lot, right? Don't you? You must.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have any advice for any aspiring automotive dealers or people who are looking to enter the automotive industry?
You got to jump in with 2 feet. This industry is not easy. It's very frustrating. I think it's one of the only industries that deals with, you know, business to business, that OEM connection. And then you got to turn around and deal with, you know, B2C, that business to consumer. So you got, you know, you're almost like a little puppet. You're getting pulled from both directions, and it gets so frustrating. And this business is hard, but if you can stick with it, it never gets easier. You just get better at the hard stuff, and it just becomes more natural, and it just flows so much. But those first, you know, when I started as a salesman at Land Rover, I was given a phone and a desk, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. Like, you just jump in and go, and it's hard. It's hard, and you're going to fail, and you can't be afraid of it, but just know that the hard's going to get easier.
I love it. I love what you said. You get better at the hard stuff.
Yep.
That's something I think I'm going to put on my wall in my office.
There you go. There you go. It never gets easier. You just get better at the hard stuff.
Exactly. That's really, really wise. So I'd love to talk a little bit about, you know, community engagement. When I talk to dealerships, you know, a lot of dealerships are very involved in their community. Are there things that you guys are doing there at Love Green that connect with your community?
Yeah, this is my favorite thing of the business. We are well connected. Give you a couple examples. Ford had a program, Drive for Your School, where I would go and talk to the club, and they would, the Student Senate Club, and they would come, and they would actually host the whole thing. They would invite family, friends, and they would test drive one of our vehicles. And every test drive, I think Ford would donate like $20. So we would raise, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in one Saturday for the schools. And we got high school kids running around everywhere. We got mom and dad running around everywhere. You know, by the time they cleaned up and left, it looked like a war zone. Like, we found shoes and t-shirts. It's like, you know, they're just kids. But you love it. You love it. Last year we hosted Pinewood Derby in our showroom, and I was so jealous that I didn't get a kit and get to race my car. I was like cheering for it. I was jumping up and down. I was like, I want to do this. This is so cool. But my dad is heavily involved in Boy Scouts. I'm on the United Way board here in Northeast Missouri, you know, and it's just, it's giving back. You know, we've been in Kirksville since 1988, and Kirksville has allowed us to stay in business. I know we give a percentage back to the community with local businesses. You know, we support the YMCA, we support the Humane Society. I think we support every school yearbook, after prom, fundraiser, you know, you name it, especially if they're a customer of ours. You know, if a customer walks in with their kid and says, hey, I need a $50 donation for after prom. Sure. Here's some oil changes. Here's a hat. Here's some swag. Like, that is such a good feeling that people want to come in here. And I know we're an easy target, you know, but it's that gratitude. It's so fulfilling. That's one of my favorites, you know, sponsoring little T-ball with your little name on your shirt. And, you know, my service manager always coaches a softball, his daughter's softball team, and we're the proud sponsor. Only thing I request is I want a t-shirt too. You know, it's, It's great. We're in the community. One thing about Kirksville is we have a parade for everything. Homecoming, 4th of July, Christmas parade. We have a parade for everything. We did not have a St. Patrick's Day parade this year. I was a little bummed. But, you know, we clean up 2 or 3 cars and, you know, go through the parade and wave to everybody. And I don't know how many Tootsie Rolls we throw out, but it's your shoulder gets sore from throwing out Tootsie Rolls. But it's just that it's that engagement. That's my favorite part of this business, is doing business outside of this building.
So, you know, you can really tell, you can really feel and hear the passion in your voice about,
thank you,
you know, your community,
thank you,
and your love for your community. And I think that that's an amazing thing. And that's what car dealerships can really bring. It's not just the cars, right? It's the people.
Yeah, it's that connection, and you have to have it.
I love it. So looking ahead, do you have any goals or aspirations for your dealership in the coming years?
So we're going to hit 10 years coming up. I think we're at year 90. We started in 1934. Yep. So we're at 90 years. So we got 10 years to go before we hit the big 100. So that's, you know, I want the doors to be open in 10 years. That's definitely a goal. But, you know, obviously the very simple things, growth, you know, the bottom line, you want to grow your people. It's just maybe expand. You know, Katie's my younger sister. You know, Katie and I, we're in our young 30s and we're pretty ambitious. And, you know, if dad got a wild hair and was like, hey, you want to go get another store, I'd be like, yes, let's do it. So I wouldn't be afraid to expand. I love challenges. And I think the next 10 years are going to be hard. So it's, I think if you just keep improving and you feel like you're improving your people and also that bottom line, I think it's, you can almost achieve any goal that you chalk up.
That's amazing. I love it. You know, we're going to start a series of webinars with a gentleman by the name of Glenn Lundy. I don't know if you've heard of Glenn Lundy. He used to be a GM at a dealership and he grew the dealership 800%.
My gosh.
Yeah. Selling 100 cars to, you know, over 1,000 cars.
Wow.
And it was in Kentucky. So it wasn't like in a huge a populous area. So I'm going to definitely make sure that you get personally invited to go to his webinars and listen to what he has to say. He might actually be someone that, you know, you guys might want to work with if you're really serious about the expansion and maybe even, you know, getting some insight into the things that he does, right, for dealerships. I might actually just introduce you to him. He's a wonderful man. And maybe I'll just take that as a note to introduce you to Glenn and then have you come to the webinar. I think we're going to have one in April and May. We're in the process right now of getting them planned and scheduled.
Ooh, that's super exciting.
Okay, cool. I'll make sure to get that introduction over to both of you after we finish recording this podcast.
Awesome.
Okay, so now I'll shift to, you know, a few questions that are non-automotive related. Are you reading anything interesting?
I'm reading right now. I'm reading Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey. And I just started the book. I think I'm in the first 100 pages of it. And, you know, he's an amazing actor and you're starting to kind of get to know him as, you know, as a person. He takes you, you know, from when he was like, I think maybe 5 or 6 years old and just kind of takes you through his walk of life a little bit. And, you know, the bumps and bruises along the way, and you got to find the light at the end of the tunnel, or, you know, you got to find something positive in that situation. And it's really uplifting. I don't think I've ever cried and laughed in the first 100 pages of any book. But it's good. I recommend it to anybody. I love reading. I love reading recommendations. Kind of quiets your mind at night and kind of gets you to escape a little bit and take your mind off business. So, yeah, I love reading. So if you got anything to throw at me to read next, I'll jot it down and I'll run with it.
There's a woman by the name of Katie Mares, M-A-R-E-S. And she wrote a book called Custom Her Experience. And it's all about making sure that businesses focus on the women that come into their businesses, that a lot of things are still focused on the men. I was just talking to Bob Kane of Jack Kane Ford, and he's also a dealership in Kentucky. And that was a book he's reading, and he absolutely loves it. And Katie she's become very popular, especially in the automotive circles, because I think she talks about automotive in particular. When you go into a dealership, there are still dealers that say, ma'am, where's your husband? You know, when she's looking at the car, it's like, you know,
I couldn't handle that.
You know, women are responsible for over 80% of all decisions. Think about that.
If not more. I don't know how many times you talk to, you know, the husband and you're trying to sell an F-250 and he's like, oh, got to talk to the spouse. And I'm like, you're going to be using this on the farm. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I get it. That'll be my next book.
Yeah, it's been highly recommended by several people. And then the podcast I told you about, the one that we just pushed out yesterday, there's 5 or 6 book recommendations. Once you click on the actual podcast, it goes to a YouTube, and then at the in the text, all those, there's like 5 or 6 books too that the ladies recommended that the gals that I interviewed last week. So
perfect.
There's some good ones in there for you to take a look at.
All right. I got some reading to do in my future.
You sure do. And some good stuff too, that I think you'll enjoy. All right. Next question. If you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you do?
I love this question. So I would start a foundation and non-for-profit, obviously. I would start a foundation and invest it right away. You know, conservatively, if you get, you know, 5%, you're looking at $500,000 a year. And I would create a foundation that kind of helps high school students that want to play college sports. And how do you get recruited? You know, I played golf in high school. I won districts and conference 3 years in a row. I placed top 10 in state 3 years in a row. And when I graduated, I reached out to, you know, 3 or 4 schools that I wanted to play for and got nothing back, like crickets. And it's like, I wasn't getting recruited. I was like, I remember like crying in my parents', you know, family room. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And I was very fortunate that, you know, my dad picked up the phone and knew somebody that had a college athlete and says, hey, you got to look at this company. They help you recruit. They build like a profile and they send it to all these schools. And I mean, it wasn't cheap by any means. You know, I was very, very fortunate that, you know, dad wrote a check for that. But we built my resume and it like went out on like a Friday, and Monday came, and I bet I was in the dining room on 2 or 3 phone calls every night getting recruited. I bet I was recruited by over 60 schools. Everything from, you know, D1, the D3, and just, I had no idea. I had no idea how to get there. So I want to create a foundation I wouldn't build the company. I would partner with the company to help pay for that recruiting process. And then, you know, once that student athlete got accepted, I would probably throw in a little NIL money, just because it's so hard to have a job and being a student athlete. You know, you got to have a little play money in your pocket in a college student, and then throw in some travel vouchers, you know, so mom and dad can go see their student athlete, you know, play. But that's what I want to do. I want to bridge that gap on how do you go from high school to college and get recruited? Because there's so many scholarships out there that are wasted. You know, that's why Title IX is such a huge issue. I come from a small high school. Nobody ever got recruited out of my high school. So scouts didn't come to a golf match and watch 3 or 4 golfers. They had no idea who I was. So that's my foundation. I want to give students the opportunity that I got. And, you know, I was just lucky enough that my dad picked up the phone and had resources. So
I think love there's, this.
Yeah, Yeah, so that's what I would do.
I love it. I think there's a huge need for this, especially as you said, for kids that are in high schools in smaller areas that don't get noticed. There could be a lot of talent sitting out there that is not, you know, meeting its full potential.
Yeah, it's crazy. We have like 15 minutes down the road, little town of like Brashear, a high school student just hit like their 1,000th basketball point, like in their career. Like that's huge. And it's like, you know, how many people know that other than the local newspaper? You know, it's that student, if that student wants to go and play in college, like help them get recruited. You know, they deserve that. And not everybody knows how to get it done. So
I love it, Courtney. You know, now with the internet and with all of the things that are at your disposal, right? LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you could start getting the word out now as you're building your foundation. You don't have to wait for that 10 million to hit your desk, right?
That's right.
So there's a lot of opportunity there, you know, when you're ready to, after you spend 110% at the car dealership every day, if you've got anything left, you can work on building that foundation.
That's right.
Okay. Is there something that, that you wish I had asked, that I didn't ask you today?
If you would ask me a question, I get asked this a lot, especially a female in the car business. People ask me my why. People ask me like, you know, what's my tick? You know, what gets me up every morning? And I think this question, it's hard to ask because it's a lot of times it's emotional. You know, it's from the heart. It's and you really got to peel back your layers and like, you know, answer that, you know, from your heart. And like, sometimes that's hard because we're so like business, you know, oriented. And, but somebody asked me what makes me tick. And it goes back to my family. My family is very close, family business. I feel honored that they trust me in this business. You know, we all make mistakes and I'll be the first one to raise my hand when I screw up. But it's that legacy. I want to be part of that legacy. I want to be part of that success story that, you know, if I could grow this to 5, 6, 7 generations, you know, there's not many dealerships out there that are even at 4. So that's my why. Family's number one. So that's kind of why I get up every day and they got my back and you know, I got theirs. So it's so important to me that, it's almost an honor. So hopefully I make my dad proud. So that's my why.
I love it, Courtney. I got to tell you, I know you're going to make your family proud. I know that you're going to do whatever you set your mind to. I can just feel it. So I want to wish you luck. And I want you to know that VinQ is going to be with you on this journey.
Okay.
If there's anything you need, right? You just let us know. But it was such a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
All right. You have a good week. Enjoy this beautiful day because you never know what tomorrow's going to bring. So
you got that right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Take care.